In this episode, we speak with Palmetto's founder and CEO, Christopher Kemper. Palmetto offers a clean energy operating platform, which makes it easier and more affordable for homeowners to source their energy from renewables like solar power. Chris sees Palmetto as the ultimate platform to make the most significant impact on mitigating climate change, and he is constantly seeking ways to compound their impact for the betterment of the environment, people, and consumers. Chris is currently a Goodwill Ambassador for the UN Environment Program and a chairman for Pay It Forward for Climate. I'm your host, RJ Lumba. We hope you enjoy the show. If you like the episode, click to follow.
RJ Lumba is the executive chairman of Market Insight Media and the managing partner of GrowthCap. He is the host of Great Entrepreneurs, a podcast for driven entrepreneurs and business owners. Our podcast covers all topics related to the entrepreneurial journey, from ideation to execution to optimization and to reaping the rewards of a well-run business. In the minutes ahead, we'll share with you unique insights and tactics from some of today's most accomplished and inspiring entrepreneurs.
Chris, thanks for joining us. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks, RJ. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Where I thought we'd kick off is this combination of being an environmentalist and entrepreneur. I think there's many people out there that do have a focus on the environment. They want to contribute. They want to have impact. They don't know necessarily how to have impact at scale. You've managed to do that. Tell us about that kind of balance or maybe synergy of being focused on the environment, but also being an entrepreneur.
Well, I think you start with I grew up with a family that was very insistent on what I did for a living really mattered. So my father was a physician and my mother was a school teacher. And so kind of ingrained in my thinking or my DNA was literally what I do with my life, not just career, but life on the whole, has to have some meaningful impact for the betterment of others. And I just naturally gravitated towards the environmental topic. And over time, I think that kind of like continuing to link back to that was super critical by way of like emission orientation. I think it was an interesting cocktail growing up in the sense of there was the, you know, why the mission mattered component, but equally my father's physician was also an entrepreneur. And I actually am a fourth generation entrepreneur. So risk is in my blood, no pun intended. And, you know, my first business was Age 8. It was a baseball card business. Maybe more on that later if you'd like. But then flipping homes through high school to college to you name it, it's just always been there. So there's kind of like that risk tolerance with the outsized return focus and interest coupled with the mission element. So as time went on, you know, it was really important that if you almost kind of envisage these two ideological kind of circles overlap right in the middle of that fulcrum of that Venn diagram, that's where I had to kind of like land things. And so that was a very hard thing to pursue, certainly a couple of decades ago when I started off, in the sense of there was just not a lot of opportunity within the environmental realm. I think it's a very different scenario here. I often refer to that as clean tech 2.0. is a technology-driven environment, and there's just so much opportunity to drive the environmental agenda for entrepreneurs. So that's kind of like how it started, and that's where we are today. Yeah.
Yeah. What's interesting is it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, you started out with the United Nations, and so it's more of this NGO kind of nonprofit side, and then, you know, maybe going into financial services. So approaching kind of the environmental sector or climate change sector in that way, but you managed to transition out into entrepreneurship. Was it that first step you were just purely mission focused?
That's right. I mean, prior to the UN, I was very focused on kind of management consulting all within the environmental arena. And so I think from my perspective after graduate school and among other things, I arrived at the UN. I was very excited about this is kind of like the best of the best when it comes to policy drivers. And I think what I saw there was, yes, in fact, you know, from like a global environmental awareness, for sure, that's the place to be. However, I wanted to drive a more tangible impact on the ground. What I started to observe early on in my career, this is as policy frameworks were being developed across, at the time it was throughout Asia, Southeast Asia, and Latin America, but policy frameworks were allowing for capital flow to come in and then real tangible projects being built. And by that, I mean like wind farms or, you know, energy projects or hydroelectric projects and things like that. And it's just awesome to see how you can establish a policy, create the environment for capital to come in, and then it gives rise to all of these entrepreneurs that are saying, actually, I know how to do this, or, you know, the whole kind of capital ecosystem kicks off. So I looked at that and I thought, listen, if I'm able to understand the policy side and bring that skill set to the capital market side, how can I actually start to drive more of a tangible impact? So I performed a career shift, which is a very uncomfortable thing for most people to do. I left one arena where, you know, I had a great CV, graduate school, and those kind of elements of pedigree behind me, and started all over. And as moving to London on an origination structure finance desk within a financial service firm there, I mean, I was fetching tea, you know, I was effectively the lowest level on a trading floor and had to work my way back up again. And I think that's a humbling experience, but equally it helped motivate a guy like me even further. So I think that, you know, within the clean energy, clean technology environment, I think it's quite helpful to have skills in one or two areas and then kind of call that your corner, you know, and then build out from that point forward.
You know, in these conversations with entrepreneurs, I like to touch on the theme of willingness to take risk and willingness to start over. And it's evident that you've done that. You almost can't be a successful entrepreneur unless you're willing to really embrace the risk. When you started Palmetto, did you ever think it could get this big?
I naively thought it would get this big. I think, to be candid, I don't think I ever would have started Palmetto if I knew it was going to be this hard. And here we are 15 years later, almost. I had visions of how ultimately, and it's still the same mission today as it was, you know, in late 2009, which is lead the world towards a clean energy future. And that's, you know, effectively, we stumbled and failed and tried and started over for a decade, cash flowed the company for a decade. And in that sense, you know, we were ahead of product market fit. And I would, that's the right way to frame that, just that era. As we raised in 2018 in our first round with Graycroft and others, and then to where we are today, we started to really see that, wow, there's some significant traction to our model. And I think had I looked back at that in late 2009, there's just no chance that I would have seen it that way. I think where I am now, though, is I have far bigger expectations for this organization and our industry on the whole. I also feel an enormous burden to really perform and extremely well within this organization. This industry on the whole needs a leader in the pack, which we don't have for the clean tech space. And that's what, you know, now in terms of next phase of the mission, that's what we're executing against. So you kind of take it one phase at a time and then you see where you end up thereafter. And I think that was kind of more my mindset in the early days. You know, now there's just this more serious aspect of, wow, we have a lot of investors, a lot of employees, a ton of customers and partners. And, you know, I really got to make sure that this company's here for the long term.
We'll go back to this kind of early part of your journey. But for the benefit of our audience, can you tell us what Palmetto does and kind of the market it plays in?
Yeah, of course. Sure. Palmetto is a technology company. And so we build products and services for homeowners and businesses that accelerate the mass adoption of clean energy. We primarily focus on technology as the scale factor and then build on a user-based, a user need scenario, those products and services. So currently we service the US market, but with ambitions to expand beyond over time.
And is it primarily solar?
It has historically been solar. We have built out software technology that provides energy advisement to the consumer that now it'll launch later this quarter that helps recommend a wider range of products for the consumer to help them transition off of the grid or reduce their fossil fuel grid reliance. So that could include a wider range of product lines. So it could be solar, storage, EV charging, smart home products, HVAC, heat pump, you name it. So the way we look at the world is that there's a ton of entrepreneurs that are entering this space. Certainly after some landmark policy that was executed in Q4 of 2022, Inflation Reduction Act. And we're looking at our platform as a method to help all of those organizations come to market. And then we deliver a best-in-class experience to the end consumer. So we really see it ultimately as a whole home electrification model.
Okay, excellent. Back to something you said earlier about you were early to product market fit. There was a lot happening. There has been a lot happening in the whole clean tech space. When you're early to find that fit, presumably you can start scaling fairly quickly. Is that what happened?
No. That is not what happened. The stories I could tell. I mean, I could fill volumes, almost an encyclopedia worth of stories on this front. I think the early days, we were just too early. In 2009, if you think about it, like the first, we were trying to explain, like our pitch decks to friends and family, we were trying to explain climate change. And I recall our presentations, we were, you know, what is this, a hoax? That's where people were. Like, we forget today that climate change is here. We see it. We, like, no matter kind of your stance on any realm or any platform, there's some acknowledgement that, okay, like this is happening to us and we need to do something. But in those days, it was, this is mythical.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about objection handling. That was problem one. Never mind a consumer or a client. We couldn't really convince investors in our company. Hence, we cash flowed it for a decade. The second thing was really around, once we could get to a point in time where we could, you know, help start to build projects. And we did that by establishing what's called special purpose vehicles. And we would raise capital, finance, you know, a one-off project one by one until there was kind of an amalgamation of those. But the cost of capital was extremely high. And in those days, clean technology was not the phrase. I think it was just renewables on the whole. But we were considered what was called an esoteric investment class, which is kind of like, you know, a nice way of saying, and this is in London, you know, like you're kind of a quirky little company, aren't you? And we're going to charge you extremely high rates for that. And that cost of capital was mid-20s in terms of return on investment. And relative to today, to put in perspective, you're talking about 5 to 8% borrowing rates. In those days, you're talking 25, 30%. And that was prohibitively high cost of capital to basically build anything. And so the places where we would go to build our projects were primarily in least developed countries. And those would be places I would say most people have not gone or traveled to, but kind of off the beaten path places where we would build run of river hydro projects or wind projects, waste energy projects, never solar at the time because the hardware technology was too expensive. And for those reasons, they had relied on oil, importation of oil and diesel generators, diesel gensets. And so we were almost at parity with the cost of their oil, except we were a little bit more reliant because the shipment of oil and logistics of that were more complex and less reliable. So we hardly at all had a market to pursue. But it was just kind of the dogged tenacity and just almost the inability to admit defeat that we just kept going and going. And then over time, investors saw, oh, okay, so there are returns here. The cost of capital does come down. Other big players had entered the space, shown that it worked. Later, they'd come to bust out of the markets, things like that, meaning go bankrupt. But as over time, logarithmically, like it improved, and then that helped drive the market. But it took an extremely long time to get there. And that is the painful truth about being too early. Yeah.
I'm so fascinated by this because I was working in investment banking, and during this kind of a fairly long time frame where clean tech went boom and bust.
Oh, yeah.
And I imagine if we plotted out all of these startups or clean tech renewables companies across a map, we would see that the large majority failed.
Yes.
Right. The question is, would more have succeeded if they had a different mindset and approach? It seems to me that you persevered. I presume it's not just intelligence, right? It's drive. Were there like extremely hard timeframes, periods where you thought you might never get out of those dark days?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think there are two stories I can share. One is in the earlier days, we had just leased a very large piece of land for a solar project on the United Kingdom feed-in tariff and just hired a bunch of people. And my father had just retired after 35 years of being a physician. And again, we grew up in a low middle income, you know, household. We not like super well to do or anything. So when he retired, he was selling his office building, and that was a big deal. That was his retirement. Anyway, the project had failed. The feed-in tariff was basically eliminated by Her Majesty, you know, basically in England. And that meant that the project failed. And in doing so, I came home to my wife that night and I'm like, we're done. This is year 8 of business. And she's like, listen, you should at least tell your parents. It's not like I grew up in some well-to-do family where, you know, someone can loan me money or something. She's like, well, you do know that your father had just sold his building and that's part of the retirement. I'm like, yeah, that's the retirement. She's like, at least tell them. And not kidding you, that he had closed an escrow that day, wired the money the next day, no questions asked, so that we could make payroll. And I explained to him, like, I don't know that I'll ever be able to give you this money back. And he's like, well, you will. You'll figure it out. Like, those are moments where that just survived another 2 weeks, by example. You know, a failed project, we lost all our money in that. I had to turn to our teammates, which is what we call our employees. And I had to explain to our teammates, like, we might not make it. And anyway, that wire came through, we made payroll in time, and then figured it out from there. And so, you know, in those moments, it's just super hard. And then the pressure of letting others down is even greater, right? I could tell you then 2-3 years later, we had turned it around to some extent. And I had hardly, again, enough money to make payroll. You kind of get the sense of the early days. Making payroll is a pretty big deal. And I went for my venture capital presentation, and my CTO at the time, and I went, we pitched to Graycroft, and it's a boardroom of about 20 individuals. And when I went in to pitch, the night before, my face, the entire right side of my face broke out in shingles, which is basically when your body says the stress level is far too high. Mm-hmm. And I was in New York. I couldn't go see a doctor or anything. So I ran off to like a local beauty salon where they would just put makeup and patch over my face. And luckily, to my left was one really nice guy, David Stern, the late David Stern, who was an advisor at Graycroft at the time. And he looked at me. He's like, you're going to be okay. And I was like, yeah, that's awesome. And it's just like, you know, the life is filled with those stories for entrepreneurs that don't have the luxury of raising millions of dollars day one. And I think the world's more full of those people than it is, you know, the others that we hear about too often from the venture side. And I would just encourage entrepreneurs, you know, just like lean into it. The saying is, where there's a will, there's a way. And, you know, people will jump in and help out.
Mm-hmm. You know, oftentimes people look back at the most challenging moments of their life and they appreciate it. They view those moments as some of the best moments because it really tested them and gave them a sense of satisfaction once they got to the other side. I've had other entrepreneurs that I've talked to said, it really took a toll on me. And I'm not sure if I would advise others to go through the entrepreneurship journey. What would you say to that?
I think to those who have said the latter, perhaps it depends like your particular road, maybe the passion of which you've approached your business or, you know, the mission behind it. And everyone has their own circumstances, right? You have to really contemplate that. There's a lot to it. It's a very complicated situation for most folks. To me, it was very simple. This is what I care about. This is what I'm here to do. Still, I try to keep it as simple as that. And I think you don't realize how strong you are truly until you're challenged. And that remains true today. There are challenges in life and challenges in business, but you just develop that self-confidence, and then eventually that translates to a stronger leader. And I think it just requires kind of like those lessons and also you learning about yourself and your own individual strength. I don't want to pretend as though I have the rule book for everyone, but I can tell you it comes down to two things for me. One is the mission has to matter, and then you just stay rooted in the values of your passion.
Mm-hmm. If someone gave you the choice of being immediately CEO of a multi-billion dollar environmental tech company, or to go through the process that you've gone through up to where you are today, which would you choose?
Oh, the latter. I think that being a CEO is a high burden job. It is not something that I would wish on my like worst of enemies. The thing I'm proud of is being a founder and frankly, the team that I've built that leads the company. You know, so I think the CEOs, you know, we're obviously figureheads, we're ultimately responsible for everything, but it is not something that I would just jump into a $20-30 billion company and just say, I want to go lead that. I feel very confident in being a CEO in Palmetto, knowing all the ins and outs and the crooks and crannies of the business, knowing the people that I've handpicked to help lead it, driving the culture based in values and principles. And that's a very different thing. And I love it. You know, I love this company, but I wouldn't want to jump into that CEO job anywhere else, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're coming up on time. I've got two kind of final questions, but before we hit those, can you tell us about the best insight you've received from another founder?
There's a lot of insights from other founders. I'd have to kind of lean on the founders. Interestingly, maybe not a direction you think I was going to go with it, but I have a lot of founder friends who've exited and they have sold off their companies at a series A, B, C. I've had founder friends who've four or five who've listed companies. And, you know, when they're on the other side of the quote unquote rainbow, which was kind of where a lot of people think you're trying to go in terms of financial benefits, the point is, it's kind of like you missed all the good days by trying to focus on that. And so it's just more of about, you know, I think the find happiness in the journey, not at the end of it. And so I try to think about that a lot. So whether it's the exit and they're on the other side and now they're looking for their next role and their next opportunity, and they're like, oh man, I wish I had actually just kind of like calmed down and really appreciated it. And I just try to think about that a lot, you know, and it's something to very easily forget.
Yeah, I love that. The reward is in the journey. Yeah, it's important to remember that. Okay, last part of the interview here. Can you tell us about a person who has had a big impact on you?
Yeah, I think for me, it's most certainly my father, right? When I grew up, he had really instilled the values around doing something that mattered, that helped other people. I think he thought I was going to be a doctor, but that's not the direction I chose. And then, you know, I've been an entrepreneur in training since I was 9 years old and have run and built various businesses. He taught me everything in terms of coming up with ideas to how to think creatively, how to challenge conventional wisdom, how to problem solve and generate an income. And I think about that a lot. And that kind of really led to where I am today. And that's probably easily the most outsized, profound influence I've had.
Excellent. Last question. The answer may be the business you currently run, but I ask this as a standard closing question. Can you tell us about a charity, cause, or other endeavor that you are very passionate about?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a starting point, I love that question. I think as a starting point at my core, I'm a climate activist. So I do believe that the planet cannot wait for us or myself included in that to accumulate wealth over a period of 30, 50 years and then pass it forward, kind of like the old school guard of how philanthropic kind of exercise used to work. So for that reason, you know, I've created a charity and an initiative on the whole called Pay It Forward for Climate, which is an initiative I set up to help early stage entrepreneurs kickstart their businesses through development training, mentoring, and investment. I've got to meet a lot of awesome founders. I spent a ton of time, you know, with early stage entrepreneurs, and they have a passion for everything from saving rainforests to driving circular economy to driving kind of more often than not, you know, something within the software, clean tech, climate tech software space. In conjunction with that, I was honored to recently become an advocate for the United Nations to help spur investment into those early stage environmental companies across the globe. So the way I see my job and my responsibility is, yes, Palmetto is going to do well by its investors, shareholders, and teammates, but my portion of that is as soon and as quickly as possible, pay it forward for climate. And that's where my heart is. And I get a thrill out of that.
Excellent. That's a great note to end on. And we'll put a link in the show notes. Chris, want to thank you again for taking the time. This has been an awesome conversation.
RJ, thanks so much. I appreciate it.